Good afternoon. You're listening to FYI Politics with Brett Johnson. Second week, we've now been doing FYI Politics, which now airs weekdays from 2 until 3 p.m. And don't forget Democracy Now!, which used to air at 2 o'clock. You can now catch that as 4, as we've made that trade with Democracy Now!. No change to the Matt McNeil Show. You're still able to hear that every weekday at 3 here on AM 950. Brett, also joined by Sam today on the other side of the glass. Sam, how you doing in there?
Not too bad. How's it going?
Going all right in here. Did you watch the Super Bowl last night?
I heard parts of it on the radio. I was actually delivering pizza, so.
Oh, yeah. How's the traffic for that? I'm imagining it's got to be a pretty busy night for you guys over at Luce.
It's decently busy, but traffic's pretty dead because everyone's at home watching the game.
Yeah.
So pretty open roads, especially in St. Paul.
Yeah. So, were a lot of people ordering pizzas for the Super Bowl, or do they already kind of have that all planned out?
Definitely there was, like, more than a normal day, but it's not quite like when I used to work at Pizza Hut, because they have, like, Super Bowl specials and stuff.
Oh, sure, yeah.
Mm-hmm. It's a little bit of an uptick, but not as much as you'd really expect unless you're, like, a Pizza Hut or a Papa John's or something.
Yeah. Gotcha. Okay. So you didn't get a chance to see any of the game or watch any of the ads, did you?
No, not really. And I didn't. I'm going to probably look back at the ads, though, at some point. When I went to school for audio engineering, we would do a big thing of, like, taking one of the ads and then doing, like, almost like a report on, like, what they did for their sound design and stuff. So.
Oh, really?
Always got to love the Super Bowl ads.
Yeah, I was not very impressed with this year's Super Bowl ads. There were a couple I liked, but I just don't get with every car commercial you have in the Super Bowl. Their ads have nothing to do with the actual cars. There were a number of those during the game last night, which I don't really quite get how that actually sells any cars. I did like the one, though. I think it was for that Hyundai where they were having that automatic parking system where the car will essentially park itself. You can get out of the car, then the vehicle itself will actually drive itself into a parking place, which I think is actually really cool to have. If I ever buy a new car, I might have to get one of those. By the way, we're also joined today by State Senator Steve Swazinski, who represents portions of Eden Prairie and Minnetonka, live in studio. And Senator Swazinski, how are you doing today?
I'm doing great. Thanks for having me, Brett.
Yeah, good to have you back on the airwaves. A lot to cover today with caucuses, of course, happening tonight in Iowa. Minnesota caucuses happening in a couple weeks. The legislature coming up. Yeah, it is a busy, busy time for politics.
Yeah, thanks for taking time.
Absolutely. So, well, before we actually dive into the meat of some of these political topics, what did you think about the big game last night?
It was a good game. I liked it. And there was one ad I did crack up during, and I don't even remember what it was for, but it was all these different people that expressions, like, do you have your head under a rock?
Oh, yeah.
Did you see that one?
I'm trying to remember. Was that the Walmart ad that was towards the beginning?
No, okay. I don't even know what it was for, but the ending was hilarious, so it was a great ad.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, other than that, I didn't really see too many memorable ads. I'm kind of an animated nerd, so I like the Rick and Morty ad they did for the Pringles that they had
in
the middle of the game.
That was hilarious.
Yeah, absolutely. All right, so lots to cover here, Senator Swazinski, and I suppose we should start with a big topic that happened over the weekend because your caucus in the Senate DFL had a change in leadership where Saturday you guys ended up voting for a new leader to go outside of State Senator Tom Bach, who had been the leader for quite some time, where now it's going to be Susan Kent who leads the caucus, so kind of share some thoughts on what happened Saturday.
Yeah, it was 6 hours of deliberation and debate. I found the whole process very insightful, very thought-provoking. I've only been in the Senate for 3 years, and I felt that we were blessed to have two people that both vying for the same position. And they both gave their 20 cents worth of why they think they should lead, and we discussed it for 6 hours, and it never got boring. It never got disinteresting. It was a great way to spend the day, Saturday. And then we voted, and it's a secret vote, and they sealed the envelope, and they had three proctors tabulating the results, and so the process worked.
And by the way, as we were talking about before we went on air, you actually don't even know what the final vote is because it was a secret ballot.
Right. And I'm just glad. I mean, I was honored to serve under Tom Bach, and now I have the opportunity to serve under Susan Kent. And they're both very, very able, professional caucus leaders.
Yeah, what you brought up before the show, too, as we were chatting, is that it's interesting because there was only two people seeking the position, and normally you would think, oh, yeah, everyone wants to be the leadership of their caucus, but that is a lot of work that goes into it, and I guess you are kind of, fortunate to actually have two people interested in that because it's a very stressful job, or it's a lot more than just being your typical state senator. You're putting in a ton of work when you're in that leadership role.
Yeah, and so we're blessed, I think, that, you know, also competition and... I think Susan's going to be great, and Tom was great, and so we're blessed.
6 hours of debate, though, and it was all interesting, you say.
I found it interesting. Some might not have, but I just thought it was just a great democracy in action.
Mm-hmm.
Textbook example.
Are you expecting the priorities in the caucus to change very much with this switch in leadership, or are you thinking that's going to remain the same? What are your thoughts on that?
Yeah, that's a great question, Brett, and I don't really know if I've given that much thought. I think that what will change is it just... Boy, we'll have to wait and see. Mm-hmm. Next time you're on the show, I can tell you. Susan Kent just brings to the table strengths that Tom didn't have, and Susan doesn't have strengths that Tom had. And so it's just going to be a different style of leadership. Mm-hmm. I think the goals of the caucus are still to take back the majority, and I think Susan, just like Tom, will bring their strengths to the table and will prevail. We will take back the majority in the Senate in November.
Yeah,
so.
Because I'm sure either way, everyone in the caucus wants either a majority leader Bach or a majority leader Kent.
Correct. Yeah. And everybody's on the same page on that with that regard.
So what do you make about this concern? Because I've seen this float, and now that you guys have switched your leadership from Tom Bach to Susan Kent saying, oh, well, now the DFL only represents metro interests. You got rid of someone who represents rural Minnesota. What do you make of that argument that people are saying out there? Do you think that actually has much impact? What are your thoughts?
Yeah, you know, I think if you've met Susan Kent or you sit down and talk to her, I think those fears would be alleviated. I think she will. I think there's a feeling right now in the Democratic Party in St. Paul about that waltz started with One Minnesota. And I think Susan will promote that message. And I think once she goes up and has some meetings with people up on the range and in greater Minnesota, I think people will go, wow, she's pretty good. So I think we'll be okay.
That's always a challenge, yeah, when you serve in the state legislature and you only represent one region of the state, because people always assume, well, you only care about what happens in your very district. But, yeah, a lot of politicians and senators and House reps actually do have concerns around the entire state of Minnesota and how the state functions.
Yeah, and we've got candidates, one out of whatever the Senate district is, that Bemidji, that race.
Yeah.
The mayor of Bemidji's, I'm sure she has concerns about Tom not being this, and I hope that Susan alleviates her concerns, because we need to pick up 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 seats, and so that we can get the majority, and they're not all in the suburbs. Some of them are in greater Minnesota, so we've got to work together on this.
Yeah, we'll have to see how the session plays out, with that new leadership, because, she's only been the leader now for 2 days, which isn't a whole lot of time.
Yeah, not even 48 hours.
You're correct, not even 48 hours. Yeah. When did the final vote actually get decided? Was that towards the evening?
It was close to now. It was like 4:30.
Oh, so you guys got started in the morning. Okay.
Yeah, we started at 9 o'clock, and we got out of there. We started at 10, and we got out of there about 4:15.
I'm just trying to picture this, too. This isn't really a political question, but do you guys have, like, guards standing outside the doors making sure no one comes in and listens, or is there, like, any security precautions? Because, obviously, it's a pretty sensitive topic, and you obviously don't want people hearing things that...
When I did rise to speak on one occasion, because I do have that teacher voice.
Yeah.
and people told me to tone it down, because outside the doors could hear my voice. Yeah. So that was the most comical moment of the day was people telling me to quiet down.
Oh, that's funny. I'm just picturing a bunch of reporters with, like, their ears on the door trying to pick up what you guys are saying in there.
Yeah, but people wanted to know.
Either way, it is going to be Susan Kent who is going to be the new DFL, for now, Senate Minority Leader. And who knows, maybe after the 2020 election, she could end up being the Senate Majority Leader. Well, I'll tell you what here, Senator Swazinski, let's take an early break on the show, because when we come back, I want to talk about what we can expect during this upcoming legislative session, because I recently saw you put out some priorities that you'd like to see happen during this session. So we'll get into that and more coming up on FYI Politics with Brett Johnson.
Hi, this is Charlie. Dad, don't embarrass me by making me say this.
What does a used iPhone go for today?
Fine. My dad is the greatest fantasy football player of all time, Matt McNeil.
I won our league this year!
Ugh. When I'm getting together with my friends without my dad, we always go in my Sienna. Not only does it drive great in winter conditions, but it can easily fit all my friends with seating up to 8.
My son's friend's parents request he drive because he has a Sienna. It tells you everything you need to know about their safety and reliability. See for yourself at Rudy Luther Toyota, 394 and 169 in Golden Valley.
Being in the Army National Guard is about more than just serving your country. It's about being there for your community when your neighbors need you most. The Army National Guard makes college affordable. Serving part-time lets you attend school full-time while you take advantage of education benefits that can help you graduate debt-free. If a civilian career is your goal, serving part-time allows you to work at a full-time job. The skills, qualities, and contacts you'll develop in the Guard can open doors to a great civilian career. Want to serve but worried about being away from friends and family? Part-time service in the Army National Guard allows you to serve close to home. Serving in the Army National Guard lets you have the life you want while you enjoy the many benefits of serving your community and nation. You owe it to yourself to learn more about how the Army National Guard can fit into your life. Visit NationalGuard.com.
Sponsored by the Minnesota Army National Guard, aired by the Minnesota Broadcasters Association and this station.
Hundreds of thousands of veterans have taken off their uniforms and put them away, carefully packed and safely stowed. But for some veterans, the uniform isn't so easily removed. The emotions experienced while serving continue to weigh on them. Life after service is different. Many veterans find transitioning difficult, and daily life is no longer as enjoyable as it once was. Some feel overwhelmed and lost. But that uncertainty doesn't take away from their strength and courage. Nor does it take away from the sense of duty veterans carry with them. The transition from service is different for everyone. If you are a veteran going through a difficult time, or know one who is, the power of one person, one connection, one act of compassion can make a difference. For free 24/7 confidential support, call the Veterans Crisis Line at 1-800-273-8255 and press 1, or visit veteranscrisisline.net.
This President's Day weekend, bring your family to the Osprey Wilds Environmental Learning Center, formerly known as the Audubon Center of the North Woods, on Grindstone Lake in Sandstone. The all-inclusive family weekend has locally sourced meals and winter activities like ice climbing, wildlife programming, skiing, and much more. Reserve your spot at OspreyWilds.org or call 320-245-2648. Osprey Wilds. Experience your environment.
You're listening to FYI Politics with Brett Johnson on AM 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota, as we're going to be chatting about the upcoming legislative session and also some national political topics as well with those Iowa caucuses tonight, as we're joined by State Senator Steve Swazinski, who represents portions of Eden Prairie and Minnetonka in the state Senate. So, Steve, let's talk a little bit about what you'd like to see passed during this legislative session, because the big one that I think everyone wants to see finally get through is that emergency insulin bill, the Alex Smith emergency insulin bill, which somehow has still not been passed. Are you optimistic we could finally get that thing through this session?
Well, it passed the House. Walt said he's going to sign it. It's just us in the Senate that's the stumbling block. we being the 67 of us, all want something done. I think it'll be one of the first bills introduced and the first bills that come out of the Senate. There's just a couple sticking points. They've been meeting all since May, the parties involved, and I think it'll be the first thing we get done. I hope so, anyways. Mm-hmm. People need it, the help.
Well, one of the sticking points on that bill is who's going to pay for this tax, obviously, where a lot of DFLers are saying, hey, we actually need to tax the insulin manufacturers. Republicans have some different thoughts. I believe Governor Walz has even said he is only going to sign a bill that does put a tax on insulin manufacturers. So there's certainly a lot of debate there. Are you kind of in the same boat with Walz on that and other Democrats that we need to have a tax on these insulin manufacturers?
Yeah, I'm with Walz on that. Mm-hmm. That's what we need.
Mm-hmm. So the Republican bill that they floated last year, I think this was from Eric Pratt, where they came up with their own proposal, which would require, as I'm kind of reading through this here, insulin manufacturers to supply the drug to patients with diabetes who are not already on public health programs and that make less than 400% of the federal poverty guideline, which, as I kind of did the math on there, or at least in this article when they did the math, they were saying it's roughly a $50,000 cap for individuals or $100,000 for a family of four. But one of the issues I have with the proposal is that it essentially has to make you plan for an emergency that comes up where you have to go through and file paperwork and say, oh, I meet these guidelines to get this insulin funding. And that, to me, kind of rubs me the wrong way, because if you're in an emergency and you need that insulin, you don't have time to sit there and wait for a few weeks or wait for a month to actually get that insulin that you need. So kind of a long-winded question, but what are your thoughts on this Republican bill that they've proposed?
I think Alex, the mother of the victim that died, she's suggested that we go with a tax on the manufacturers and let's just get this done. We're bickering over how to pay for something when I think the idea that Walz has put on the table will save people's lives.
Yeah, absolutely. And at least I think there are a few Republicans. I know Scott Jensen's among them in the Senate that I think is in favor of more along the lines of that Alex Smith bill.
Yeah, and I'm going to miss Scott Jensen.
It's too bad he's not seeking re-election this
year. No, he's one of the guys that's willing to reach across the aisle from time to time when he thinks it's the right thing to do.
And speaking of reaching across the aisle, I believe he was also someone who was reaching across the aisle on another one of the issues that I know you'd like to see covered during the upcoming session, and that has to do with gun reform, because you're a big backer of those red flag laws and universal background checks.
I am, and I did meet with the chief of police of Minnetonka and Eden Prairie just last week. I just wanted to hear what they had to say, and both of them believe that, you know, red flag laws are the way to go, but they had concerns about the safety of their police officers, and I never really thought. I mean, it's just the beauty of this job is when you talk to people involved in the issue, and then you find out that what their concerns are. Because right away, if you just told me what do you think of red flag laws and what they are, I'd be like, well, yeah, I'd support that. But then when the police have to knock on the door of a home and announce we're here to take your guns and you're already psychotic and you're going off on your significant others and your family and they're concerned about you and the police, you know, come storming in ready to remove those guns. But part of it is that's their job, too. But still, I hadn't thought of it from their point of view.
Yeah, that would be, a little scary if you're heading into someone's residence and you have someone who is unstable and you're saying, oh, yeah, we're here to take away your guns. That's probably not going to go over very well with someone that's in that residence.
Correct. It's just another viewpoint.
Mm-hmm. We're at 952-946-6205, 952-946-6205. Should mention we are, of course, live today and would love to have your phone calls because it's your chance to ask a state senator, well, pretty much anything you want related to politics.
Absolutely.
Yeah, so love to have your phone calls here at AM 950. So recently, the Senate Judiciary Committee held these hearings up in northern Minnesota. Mm-hmm. Oh, man, I'm blanking on where
Hibbing.
They actually... Hibbing, that's right. And they debated six bills, the two DFL bills, which had to do, obviously, with universal background checks and the red flag laws. They debated two Republican bills, which, in my opinion, obviously have no chance of ever passing. One of them, I think, is the one where guns no longer require a background check whatsoever, yeah. Which is kind of nuts. But then they did debate these two other Republican bills, and I'm wondering if we might see the Republicans put these two bills through. One would, I believe, strengthen the penalty for transferring a gun to someone who shouldn't have one, from like a misdemeanor to a felony. And then there's another one that would also strengthen some gun laws as well. Has there been any thoughts from the GOP on if they're going to bring these bills forward during the session? Or
I haven't heard a word.
Really?
And
okay.
I don't know if it's just a way to compromise or muddy the waters. I don't know. I haven't heard a word. I'm not on public safety or judiciary committees.
Right, right.
So I'm not sure I would if I wasn't on those committees, but yeah, we haven't heard. Most of the press I read about, and most of our over 80% of Minnesotans want red flag laws and background checks.
Wow, is it really that high?
I saw a survey that was 91% on background checks, but both of them are around 8. You know, when overall, I've not seen one poll yet that was under 80% on either of those two.
Wow, yeah, and it feels like, yeah, these Republican bills that they were bringing up often are just the talking point they often use, saying we just need to strengthen our laws on the books, which is kind of what they're doing by saying, oh, yeah, it'll be a felony instead of a misdemeanor if you illegally transfer guns to someone who shouldn't have one. So, yeah, we'll see if they actually do end up bringing that before, obviously, the full Judiciary Committee and then the Senate floor, because I think, and you could probably speak to this as well, there probably is some pressure on a lot of the senators that are on the Republican caucus that they need to get something done on guns during the session.
Boy, you'd think so. You know, all those young people that are, you know, taking their own lives because of firearms. Two-thirds of firearm deaths in Minnesota are self-inflicted. And so we tend to focus on the mass shootings when they, you know, when they happen. But we forget that on a daily basis, somebody in Minnesota uses a firearm to take their own life. And I think we could do a better job to try to save those people's lives.
Yeah, and obviously being a teacher, too, you're very sensitive to this topic,
hypersensitive.
Too. Yeah, yeah, most certainly, because I'm sure you'd be the first person that would like to live in an era where we no longer have to have these little drills in school. Not little drills, so those drills where we have to do practice for school shootings, which, and how to react to that, which is never fun. I think we started doing those back when I was in school, too, towards the end, and I'm sure that ramped up as the years got on, and those have to be, they're necessary, but they're also kind of depressing, too, aren't
they? Yeah, when you talk to parents of grade school kids, they're bummed out when their kids come home from school, and I did talk to a constituent recently that their two kids were playing active shooter lockdown.
Playing like a game?
They were reacting an active shooter. And they were like, that was their, it was like a first grade and second grade couple kids. And it was really disturbing to hear that parent.
Exactly,
talk.
Yeah.
Right. They were, you know, playing active shooter. And wow, it's just stuff like that. But it's pretty tough for a teacher to look at that empty desk that used to have a warm body in it, and that kid's never coming back because of easy access to firearms.
Easy access to firearms, as you're talking about, how the majority of these actually are just self-inflicted, which is something that often doesn't get reported when it comes to gun violence, is that, and unfortunately is the case.
Yeah, yeah.
We're at 952-946-6205, 952-946-6205. If you'd like to chime in on our conversation, your chance to ask State Senator Steve Swazinski anything, as we have open phone lines and are willing to talk about any political topic or non-political topic, as we'll take your calls here at AM 950. Well, tell you what here, Steve, coming up on the other side of the break, we'll continue with the state legislature, but then I also want to talk about caucuses, because I know this is something you talked about a lot when you were a high school teacher with government.
Thank you.
Yeah, I want to give a thought.
Okay.
Give your thoughts on that, too. So we'll come on back, coming up next here on FYI Politics with Brett Johnson.
Welcome to 2020 Talks, where we track the 2020 election process from the studios of KHOI in the heart of Iowa.
There's a very progressive lane that Senator Sanders and Senator Warren are sort of competing in. Then there's a moderate lane that Vice President Biden is involved in. And you want to look and see within each lane who emerges, because Iowa's job is predominantly not to determine, quote unquote, a winner,
but to narrow the field, according to former Iowa Governor Tom Vilsack, who's endorsed former Vice President Joe Biden. Biden began the Democratic race as the frontrunner, but momentum, as well as criticism from other leading candidates, is growing for Vermont Senator Bernie Sanders. Iowan Cody Lekkonen has supported Sanders since 2015.
The ability to beat Trump, he's the only one who's in a good position to do it. He has a movement, he has momentum. I think he's going to take it to the White House.
Momentum that scares some Democrats. John Kerry, who stumps for Biden, was overheard by an NBC analyst at a Des Moines hotel lamenting, quote, the possibility of Bernie Sanders taking down the Democratic Party, unquote. Biden, Sanders, Massachusetts Senator Elizabeth Warren, and former South Bend Mayor Pete Buttigieg have all topped the famed Des Moines Register poll by Seltzer & Company. This weekend's pivotal poll was abruptly canceled after Buttigieg's name allegedly wasn't given as an option by at least one survey caller. Tonight, caucusgoers choose any candidate they want in the first round of voting. In the second, they must choose between those that garnered at least 15% the first time around. And they vote with their feet, which makes for lively engagement, but worries Iowa Democrat Teresa.
I'm a little more undecided just because the idea that I publicly have to be out there for one candidate instead of just going in a ballot box and voting. For me, I think it's mostly conflict. I'm not a fan of it. So the idea of being somewhere in a public place where someone could very obviously know that they disagree with me, I don't do well in those sort of situations, so I'm intrigued.
There are reasons some people may not share their preferences. ACLU Iowa's Erica Bartz explains how.
There will also be a chance for people who are still undecided to go stand in an area designated for undecided folks. And that is perfectly fine and encouraged. You just need to be prepared to have the other groups try to persuade you a little bit.
Republican caucuses in Iowa aren't as public.
They do essentially a straw poll. Paper ballots are distributed. They don't do the physical realignment like Democrats do.
President Trump faces former Massachusetts Governor Bill Weld and former Illinois Congressman Joe Walsh tonight. At least nine other state GOPs have canceled their primaries. Some candidates are banking on other states. Businessman Tom Steyer got an important endorsement from the Black Women's Caucus of South Carolina, where he's battling for second place. And former New York Mayor Mike Bloomberg is focused only on Super Tuesday states. From Pacifica Network and Public News Service, I'm Lily Bolke. Thanks to Laura Flanders for additional sound, and thanks for listening at pacificanetwork.org and publicnewsservice.org.
With all the convenient big box stores that sell appliances, why do so many Minnesotans choose Warner Stellion? Check online to learn that Warner Stellion is a Minnesota family-owned business for over 60 years. Warner Stellion sells more brands than anyone else, and our passionate specialists are committed to impressing you so much that you'll refer us to everyone you know. That's our mission here at Warner Stellion. Ask around. Check us out online. And when it's your time to buy appliances, join over 300,000 Minnesota homeowners and choose the specialists, Warner Stellion.
The AM 950 2020 Blue State Ball is on Sunday, February 23rd at Bauhaus Brew Labs in Minneapolis. We're celebrating AM 950's 15th year. The VIP event will take place from noon until 1 with a meet and greet with Tom Hartman, plus all the local hosts. General admission is from 1 until 4 p.m. and expect a lot of political guests. And all tickets get a signed copy of Tom Hartman's latest book. Get tickets now. VIP $75, general admission $40. You get them at am950radio.com. That's am950radio.com. The 2020 Blue State Ball, Sunday, February 23rd.
Moe's Tax Service in St. Paul is one of the most successful independently owned tax services in the entire country. They offer a diverse team of highly trained and screened tax preparation experts for personal and business tax needs. This year especially, changes to the tax code make it even more important for you to have someone who is a dedicated tax preparation professional. Moe's has been in the business since 1971. Visit them at moestax.com. That's M-O-H-S-Tax.com. Or give them a call, 612-721-2026.
With your AM 950 weather, I'm Brett Johnson. Look for mostly cloudy skies today with the temp falling to about 25. Tonight, mostly cloudy with a low around 13. Tuesday, partly sunny with a high near 19. And Wednesday, sunny with a high around 23.
Don't miss the Midwest's largest health and wellness show. It's the Healthy Life Expo this Saturday and Sunday at the Minneapolis Convention Center. See up to 200 exhibitors, free speakers, and more. The Healthy Life Expo this Saturday and Sunday at the Minneapolis Convention Center. See it all at expoguys.com. That's expoguys.com.
Welcome back to FYI Politics with Brett Johnson on a Monday afternoon. Joined along by State Senator Steve Swazinski, who of course serves in the Minnesota State Senate, representing areas of Eden Prairie and Minnetonka. So before we dive into caucuses, because I want to get your thought on that, not only on the Iowa caucuses, but also what's happening in Minnesota, since you're obviously used to be a government teacher, I'm sure you have some thoughts on how the process works, but I want to touch on one final topic that I know you wanted to highlight for the state legislature, and it's one I have mixed feelings on, and that has to do with vaping.
Oh.
Because I saw you highlight this one right here, and you have some concerns with young people that are under the age of 18 that are vaping right now.
It's, you know,
what are your concerns with that? Yeah, go.
Yeah, 36 years ago or some such thing, I started teaching in Eden Prairie, and the kids had a smoking room. They actually had a room to smoke in because the philosophy of the administration was let's just put them into one place.
So you're, at Eden Prairie, they actually
at
had
Eden Prairie, they had a smoking
room.
What
year was this? 85. Wow.
And it was like, I get it now. You know, I mean, put them in the, you know, rather than throwing cigarette butts everywhere,
sure.
and hiding and in the bathrooms and starting fires. So, and then over the next 30 years, you just saw it less and less and less and less. Where I started telling people my last few years of teaching, I think we've cured this youth of smoking, and it's so rare. And I never smelled tobacco on kids' clothes, and I just thought we did a great job educating young people, and let's put tobacco, you know, out of business and live healthy lives. I just thought that was the wave of the future. And then all of a sudden, vaping comes in, and it's just, and kids think it's cool again, and it's this cute little metallic device that looks like a toy. It's weird. And when I've been to high schools, I'll always ask, you know, how many have you know somebody who vapes, and every hand goes up.
Really? Every single one.
Yeah,
wow.
Everyone. And even ninth grade class, I asked, every hand went up. And then I ask them how many you've seen vaping in the school, and about 80% of their hands go up that they've seen somebody vaping in the building. But so easy to hide. I mean, we've got, it's an epidemic. And we better get a handle on it, otherwise we're going to have rooms in our schools again for
vaping rooms,
for vaping,
my goodness.
Rooms to keep it safe because, yeah, anyways, that's my 60-second answer.
And the timeline does kind of match up because it was only a few years ago where that really started to get kind of big, where I know you stopped teaching, what was it, like 2015 or 16 before you ended up getting elected to the state senate. And it was in those last few years where, it really kind of took off like wildfire, the popularity of vaping.
Yeah, it's crazy.
So what are your thoughts on how we actually handle this? Do we need like an age restriction on who can buy vaping devices, or do we need to enforce more what's on the book right now? Because I do have mixed feelings about this, because I've also talked to a number of people who are adults that are saying, oh, well, vaping actually helped me quit cigarettes. And their argument is that people just need to be educated about what actually is in your vaping devices, where if you just kind of take a random one that you're not doing your research on, you can end up with some health problems.
Well, and it's like any other issue. There, I met a woman that was like my age that was upset that they were going to take out, she liked the candy flavored tobacco in her pen, and now we're getting rid of it. Or with me, my, you know, say you can't have candy flavored tobacco, and yet that's why what she likes. And I had a kid raise his hand, and he admitted to vaping, and he says, I vape because I'm so stressed out. And this was a senior in high school. We shouldn't have our high school kids needing to self-medicate because of stress. And so it's a complicated issue, and with respect to the age, you know, many people want it to be 21, and I always have just mixed feelings on having ages be how we determine things, you know, because if we're, I mean, I know it's cliche, but we're going to send our young people into, you know, harm's way in the battle at age 18 because they're ready for that. How can you look them in the eyes and say, and when you, but you're not quite ready, in my opinion, to buy tobacco products or to drink alcohol, or it's just, we got to get a handle on a more consistent way to say, this is the age, if you're going to sign up, then let, you know, if this is the age, we truly believe you're an adult, and then enforce that law. You know, with respect to drinking, two kids, we're raising a generation since we raised it to 21. I mean, I'm not going to ask you, but most young people probably don't wait till they're 21.
Most certainly, yes.
Right, so do we just raise a young generation that it's okay to break the law? Because we're going to make a law that says 21, but we're really not going to enforce it. And I just wish if we make laws, let's just enforce them. And so it's a complicated issue, though.
And I'm sure the dynamic is a little different at the legislature, too, where you have both Democrats and Republicans who have different thoughts on this, where it doesn't necessarily fall along partisan lines, where you have one party that says, oh, yeah, we need to regulate vaping, and another party that says, oh, we need to do nothing about it. I imagine there's a lot of crossover between DFLers and Republicans in the legislature on that issue.
Well, we all want our kids to be safe. Yeah. All 67 of us, if you ask, you want your children to be safe, they'd all say yes. But, yeah, then, you know, that nanny state from some conservatives that we can't regulate everything. And but I just really, truly believe we were so close to having a generations of young people never starting to smoke. Mm-hmm. And to be back into that world is just so bizarre.
Yeah, and it is a complicated issue in terms of how you do regulate it, because you did bring up that good point. Just raising an age won't necessarily solve the issue, so to speak, similar to, as you're saying, with drinking and smoking cigarettes. So it certainly is complicated, and as we're talking about here too, I mean, people do actually swear by some of the benefits that they actually do get from vaping.
Yeah.
We're at 952-946-6205. Looks like we might have someone chiming in that hopefully will get on the air in just a few minutes on here on AM 950, free to take your calls during the entire show today as you're listening to FYI Politics with Brett Johnson. And we're currently speaking with State Senator Steve Swazinski, representing areas of Eden Prairie and Minnetonka. Obviously, the big issue that's going to be debated, though, during the legislature is the bonding bill. It's the so-called bonding session.
Yeah.
And are there any major projects around the metro area that you're kind of highlighting and others in your caucus that you really think is important to be having in the bonding bill this year?
Yeah, you know, the ones that, well, there is only one in bonding construction project in the district, and it's actually not in my district, but it would benefit my district, and it's the Public Safety Training Center off of 169 in Edina. So I hope that bill gets part of the bonding bill. But I really, truly, there are so many small towns in Minnesota that they feel the water safety, water treatment plants, that they just need help because it's so expensive to build those water treatment plants.
Right. Mm-hmm.
And we want, I think, safe water coming out of that tap. So for me, water treatment plants would be take precedent over, you know, roads and buildings. But every project's key, and bonding helps the economy. It employs people. It's a good thing, and interest rates are low right now, so it's a good time to use money for bonding for projects. But if I had to rank order, I'd say water treatment facilities should take precedent.
So what I've always wondered when you guys go through and talk about the bonding bill, there just has to be like an overwhelming amount of requests that come into the legislature saying, hey, we want funding for this project in Willmar, we want funding for this project in Duluth, or we want to build this bridge in Stillwater, and so on and so on and so on. How do you guys actually go through and break down what projects go into each bill? Because to me, that sounds like an overwhelming process. Do you guys have like a gigantic list of proposals, or how does that work?
Well, the governor and the Senate majority, or the Senate committee, Dale Senjum's the chair, and the House committee, they all get together and give their lists, and how they start whittling it down is well, that's why we have a session every other year specifically for bonding,
right.
Because this is what we do, and it's so it's not about policy and funding projects, it's just about bonding in theory. There'll be things brought up, you know, recreational marijuana and insulin and opioids, and there'll be other issues that come up, but it's quite a process to watch.
Oh, I imagine, too. And, yeah, once you start debating some of those projects, too, you probably get senators who are from those local districts saying, oh, well, you didn't cover my project in this bill. Then it's back to negotiations and so on and so on.
Yeah, it's called pork barrel politics for a reason.
Exactly, for lack of a better way of putting
right,
it, yes.
Right, right.
952-946-6205. Let's head to the phone lines and talk to Randy in St. Cloud. Hey there, Randy. What's on your mind today?
Well, as you guys keep talking, more stuff gets on my mind.
Good.
I think, first off, I would recommend that the senator listen to, you guys broadcast a thing called the Ralph Nader Radio Hour.
That we do, yes.
And He often has very excellent discussions about a ton of different things, but one of the things that I brought up a while ago was public banking, which is something that would address the bonding issue, because one of the big things on the bonding issue is that we borrow the money from very wonderful and well-meaning institutions like Goldman Sachs and J.P. Morgan Chase, and they charge wonderful interest rates that are in our interest. Mm-hmm. They don't fix the LIBOR rate or any of that stuff. I'm being very sarcastic.
I imagine so, unless you somehow became a Goldman Sachs employee there, Randy.
Yeah, exactly. This is part of my commission, man.
Yeah, exactly. No, but you do bring up a good point. So you're saying if you set up like a state bank, you could potentially borrow from that instead of going to Wall Street and J.P. Morgan and Goldman Sachs and so on.
Instead of paying 3 to 4 to 5 to 7 or 8% interest, depending on the rating that you were given.
Oh, I hope it's not going up towards 8, but anyways, continue.
Yeah, no
kidding. Well, it depends. It depends on the rating that you're given by the very impartial rating systems that we know. That's all fixed, too. But then that interest that, say, you borrow to fund water treatment facility in the Buffalo, Minnesota area, that you set up funding for that, and the interest is 3%. The state gets that 3%. And, you know, all of the conditions about it can be more advantageous to the people in the state of Minnesota, and that money stays here. And another thing that I wanted to bring up, which is kind of a complete...
Yeah, go one more here, because we do have a couple more callers behind you, Randy.
The safety issue about, you know, the problem of having kids doing that training for gun safety and an active shooter in a school. I'm old enough to have every first Wednesday, you know, those sirens go off, and now we talk about the sirens on first Wednesday at 1 o'clock are about tornadoes and bad weather. Well, the original thing on that, and I'm old enough to have done this every first Wednesday when I was in school, is, okay, kids, put your heads under the desk and put your heads by your knees. And the joke was always, and then kiss your butt goodbye. But no, put your head under the desk and cover your head to protect you in case those Ruskies send an atom bomb over here. So and that was this is what we're going to do to keep you safe. And it was total BS. It wasn't going to keep any. When the bomb comes, nothing's going to keep us safe. So that was just my interpretation as I got older was that's a way to make you be afraid. And doing those drills in the school with 6, 7, 8, 9-year-old kids and tell them this is going to keep you safe if somebody comes in here with an automatic weapon is the same type of BS. It's not going to work. Kids are going to panic if people are actually getting shot and they hear guns going off. So it's let's keep everybody afraid and then we'll vote for people who will keep us safe.
All right, Randy, we're going to have to leave it there, but you do bring up a good point about that where, yeah, ultimately it's a lot different to actually do a drill versus actually doing it in real time where it's not a drill, where you actually do have an active shooter, and I think that is a good point where you do have people who are probably going to end up panicking in that situation. Let's get to one more call before we head to our final break of the show. We've got Joe in Minneapolis. Hi there, Joe.
Yes, hi, good afternoon. I wanted to ask the senator if he has heard of any plans by the Republicans to introduce any voter suppression bills this year.
I have. I mean, I've heard rumors of it coming up, and I just think it's abhorrent. I think, you know, the example that I just recently heard is, what if the Drake Hotel had happened the day before the election, and your wallet went up in flames that day, and all of a sudden you're denied that most important of rights that we have. And that example in and of itself was all I needed to be, and I was already opposed to it just because of, as you said, voter suppression, but that example was brought to my attention, and I just thought, wow, that's great. So, yeah, I've heard rumors. It's coming up.
Yeah,
and okay, thank you.
Yep, and you are correct, Joe. We heard, I believe, Gazelka talking about that a few weeks ago, saying that, hey, maybe we do actually need to do this through legislation rather than a constitutional amendment. And my whole thing with that, too, with voter ID is that it doesn't actually prevent voter fraud. It prevents voter impersonation, which almost never happens where someone actually goes to a polling place. For instance, if I go to a polling place and say, hey, I'm Sam Turnberg, not Brett Johnson, yeah, a photo ID would prevent that, but when does that ever happen? When does anyone try that? Just the risk would strike me as being way too great of being convicted.
It's a felony.
Yeah, yeah. Am I really going to risk getting convicted of a felony to impersonate Sam or impersonate you at a polling place?
Right.
Yeah, it seems kind of ridiculous to me. Hey, we got one more break left in the show, and we will continue with your phone calls. And if we have some time, maybe briefly get some thoughts on the Iowa caucuses taking place tonight. You're listening to FYI Politics with Brett Johnson on your Monday afternoon.
Turn to Auto Technical with your vehicle donation. Even though Auto Technical is a small nonprofit, we have helped more families with transportation than any organization in Minnesota. Since 1994, we have reconditioned donated vehicles so they have a higher tax benefit. Call Richard at 612-919-5526. 612-919-5526 or autotech.org.
This is Chad, owner of AM950. Our station has worked with Barbara from WYSIWYG Web Design for years on everything from logo to print design, and especially for developing our website. She does great work and is great to work with, listening to what our goals and design ideas were while offering new, innovative ideas to create the website we are proud of today. Barbara made sure she understood our station, our goals, and our mission before she started working on our site, and made suggestions to help control the cost. Plus, she's friendly, which set us at ease. I recommend Barbara at WYSIWYG Web Design because I know she will deliver an attractive, professional website within the budget you have. She is a local independent business that specializes in helping other local businesses achieve their website and design goals. She can work with nearly any budget and create anything from simple sites to robust custom functionality. To find out more about the company AM950 Trust, go to WYSIWYGWebDesign.com. Spelled out just like it sounds, WYSIWYGWebDesign.com.
Hey there, it's Brett on FYI Politics with Brett Johnson, as we're live in studio with State Senator Steve Swazinski, representing portions of Eden Prairie and Minnetonka. That's at least the easier way to think about it, but technically, what is your district number?
Wow. 48.
48, all right. Oh, man, wow. I just put you on the spot,
you
right?
You did.
I know.
48.
But, I mean, those numbers don't actually mean anything to anybody. They more want to know what towns do you represent.
Right. So
and it's
Prairie,
Eden Prairie, Minnetonka.
Minnetonka.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, but District 48.
That's funny. I had to ask you because I was blanking on it myself.
Yeah, go on. Yeah, sorry that I had to think for about 2 seconds. Wow.
Hey, let's go to Fred in Minneapolis who wants to chime in on a topic. Hi there, Fred. What's on your mind today?
Hi. I think it would be a good idea, since originally public schools were supposed to produce good citizens and it would put the Republicans on the defensive, that the Democrats ought to run hard on a civics requirement in high school.
Oh, you're speaking Steve's language right there, I think.
It's not inherently left or right, but they would be against it.
Yeah, Fred, I introduced Bill on this for the last 3 years. And last session, the compromise that came out of committee was encouraged. So they crossed out required and replaced it with the word encouraged. I haven't given up. I agree with you, Fred. It's something I believed in with every bone in my body that a class, and not for ninth graders. Many schools require it in ninth grade. And when you're in ninth grade, you're not signing up for selective service. You're not paying gas tax. You're not paying income taxes. But when you're junior and senior in high school and you see that 18-year-old right to vote on the horizon, that's when we should be requiring an American government class in our high schools. And I believe, what is it? Is it 38 states, or maybe it's 28? One of those two numbers do require a civics requirement to graduate. So we're definitely in the minority on that one. But thanks.
Why do people say they're against it?
A mandate upon the schools that school districts should be able to decide what the curriculum is, and not the state of Minnesota. And the other class I think our kids should have to graduate is a financial literacy class. And I've been working on that for the last couple of years, and I'm running into the same resistance from people. And it's not an unfair argument. I mean, it's they just believe that the school district should be left alone to require the individual classes they feel is important.
Well, then they wouldn't have to teach math if they didn't want to.
Right, well, yeah. Well, keep in mind, as Brett said, you're kind of preaching to the choir here.
Right. I know that, but yeah, just wanted to get it out there.
No, I appreciate that, Fred. Hey, and spread that to everybody you know, will ya?
Oh, looks like we just lost Fred there. Yeah, as soon as he brought that up, I know. Yeah, that is definitely one of the big topics that you've been highlighting for a while, and I fully agree with you, because people don't often know how their government actually works. They just think, oh, well, I vote for president and he or she decides everything. And that's not how the process works.
No.
We don't live under a so-called dictatorship where the president dictates everything that happens. No, it's what happens in your local state legislature, at your city council, or in Congress. That
right.
has a
or the Met Council, or the Hennepin County Board, and teaching kids about what caucuses look like so they're not fearful of the experience.
Mm-hmm. That's funny, though. They crossed that out and put encouraged in there.
Yeah. Compromise.
Encouraged doesn't really do anything. You can encourage a student to take a class in anything, and that doesn't mean they're going to actually take that class.
No, it's a textbook example on how a bill becomes a law.
Mm-hmm.
You know.
So we're one of the only states that doesn't have that civics requirement.
God, I just found this out. It was either 38 or 28.
Yeah, I'm just surprised Minnesota's among those states, because oftentimes we hear, oh, we do such a good job with our education system, and yet we don't actually have that civics requirement.
Right, and we have the highest voter turnout in the country, so maybe we are doing things right, because we do have the highest voter turnout.
Or
of
maybe
the 50
we would
states.
Even have, yeah, an even more educated populace that goes out to vote and participate.
Yeah, how can we get those 20% that aren't voting to the polls?
Exactly. I like the financial literacy part, too, because even when I was thinking back to high school or even college, yeah, I was kind of in the blind on how credit cards work or mortgages or anything like that.
And we used to watch our parents around the kitchen table pay their bills, and they'd fight, and we'd ask questions, and now those days are over.
And that's a good point, because, yeah,
they do it online.
And you don't get a chance to see that anymore and how it actually impacts the finances. So.
Thanks for having me on.
Absolutely, yeah. With you on those two bills, we'll have to see what happens in the legislature. Hopefully
Thanks,
get some luck. All right, we've been joined by State Senator Steve Swazinski on FYI Politics with Brett Johnson. Stay tuned. Matt McNeil is coming up next.